So in this text, we have studied the three paths, the path of service, the path of bhakti or love for God, and the path of pranayama or the breathing, breath control, and the yoga, through which all the three paths take us to the highest truth. But Raman Maharishi, the teacher here, says the path of knowledge is the straight path. And without knowledge, liberation is not possible. You have to have the knowledge of who you are, who is God, and what is this world. And last week we had introduced the subject. I'll just go through it in 5 minutes, not go into detail. But in the path of knowledge, what we do is instead of solving the problem, we dissolve the problem. Instead of trying to solve each problem at a time, you dissolve the problem at the root. So go to the root of the problem. How do we do that? By inquiring as to who am I, who is God, what is this world. And before inquiring, you have to purify the mind. The mind has to be made free of anger, jealousy, greed, hatred, disturbances, arrogance. Once the mind is pure, then it is ready to inquire intelligently. And then we talked about who has the problem. You say, I have a problem. I have a problem with my spouse, my child, my boss, my neighbor. So we said, inquire who you are. Who are you really? Are you this body, mind, intellect? Are you this male or female? What is your true nature? And we'll be going into this, answering these questions in more detail in the subsequent verses as to who am I, who has this problem, and so on. And we said it's a direct path, but not easy. It needs a lot of contemplation. And we talked about do not change the surroundings. We try to change the surroundings and hoping that if my husband changes or my job changes or my town changes or I'll be okay. But they say change yourself and then the surroundings may or may not change, but you will be fine. So we had done that in detail last week. But it was an introduction to the path of knowledge. So we'll do the verse number 17, page 53. It starts with, what is this mind? Because the mind is the source of all the problems. You know, when my mind is peaceful, I'm happy. When my mind is disturbed, I'm unhappy. And all the stress and problems, everything we blame on the mind. So they say, what is mind? So verse number 17, those who can chant, please do, otherwise you may just listen. Manasam tu kim margane krite. Naiva manasam marga arjavat. Marga arjavat. So manasam tu kim, manas means mind. So, two means but, or now let us go to the new subject. So, that's why he puts the word two. Now, let us see manasam kim. What is this mind? What is this mind? And how do we find out? Margane krite, by the path of inquiry. When I inquire into the source of the mind, what is the mind? Where is the mind? Does the mind even exist? What do I find? Na eva manasam. This mind does not exist. This mind is not. What are you talking? The mind does not exist. All my problems are in the mind. I get stressed out and that's why I have to go to a psychiatrist and take Valium and can't sleep at night and take a sleeping pill and then I fight with my. Everything is the mind. And you say there is no mind? Yep, that's what the teacher says. Marga arjava. It's a straight path. You eliminate the mind itself. So once you eliminate the mind, then where is the problem? Then you don't need to calm the mind, purify the mind, relax the mind. There is no mind. So that is that we will try to prove today. Is the mind real? So that is my question. Is the mind real? So first of all, let me ask the question, am I real? Do all of you think you are real? Anybody thinks he doesn't exist? We all exist. We are all real. But what is our existence? So if I ask somebody, who am I? Obviously, they'll say, you know, my name is so-and-so. I come from this town. I am a male or female. So that is our entity that we all give. So I'm real. Yes, I exist. But in what form do I exist? That is the question we need to ask. And we need to think about it. That what is it that I really am? What is it that I really am? What is my true nature? Then we say that when we say, is the mind real? We need to know what is real, what is unreal, and what is illusion. In our mind, something I can see is real. If I can touch this table, it is real. But God, I can't see him, hear him, smell him, taste him, touch him, feel him. I'm not sure if he exists. So anything that I cannot see, hear, smell, taste, touch, cannot think about, I say is not real. Planets, I know, even I haven't seen them, maybe the distant, but I know because spaceships have gone there, you know, Uranus, and scientists tell us. But what is real, what is unreal, and what is illusion, we'll illustrate with a story, and then we'll spend some time talking about real and unreal. So there was this man who wanted the highest knowledge. So he climbs to the top of the mountain, takes him several days, you know, he's hiking with his backpack. After about 2 weeks of hiking, finally he reaches the top of the mountain and there is this yogi sitting there. It happens in all mountains. When you reach the top, there will always be a yogi sitting there. But to answer your question, so he bows down at his feet and says, sir, I'm here to ask you. So he said, okay, ask, what is your question? So he says, is this all real? But is this all real means, you know, he has heard that this world is not real. So is this all real? So the master doesn't answer. He says, what do you think? You tell me. I don't know. That's why I'm here to ask you the question. He said, why don't you go down, think about it, and come back? So poor guy hikes down two more weeks, reaches the bottom of the mountain, sits under a tree, meditates, you know, for 6 months. Finally, again, he climbs two weeks up, reaches the top. He says, sir, I have come up with the answer. He says, what? He says, this world is real. Teacher says, that's wrong. Go back and think some more. So I came for an answer. He's telling me to go back and think. Yeah. But the guru has said, so he has to listen. So he hikes back down, meditates for a year, goes up and says, this time, you know, he says the real was a wrong answer. So he says the world is unreal. He says, wrong. Go back and think again. Poor guy, he hikes back down. Again, he spends another 2 years, you know, meditating deep. You know, then he comes up to the mountain, hikes up again. He wants to please the teacher. He says, teacher, the world is real and unreal, both. Wrong. Again, he has to go back down. He says, go back and think about it. Finally, 3 years, 3 months, and 3 days, and 3 hours, he meditates. And again, climbs back up, 2 weeks, reaches the top. This time he says, teacher, I have come to the conclusion, this world is not real and it is not not real. The world is not real and it is not unreal. It is neither. This world is not real, the world is not wrong. What is the answer? You know, every answer I give is wrong. I say it's real, it's wrong, unreal, not unreal. What am I to do? Go back and think some more. So he goes down 5 years, 5 months, 5 days, 5 hours. He meditates. Finally, by now, you know, he's tired and he's exhausted. Finally, he climbs up and there's a smile on his face. Teacher asks him, so what is your answer? He says, the world is an illusion. He says, good, you have the answer. I don't need to teach you. So what do we mean by this? Why did he say the world is an illusion when I can see, hear it, smell it, taste it, touch it? When we say real, In our mind, what is real is what I can see, what I can. But think about it, like the sunrise and sunset. You see it every day, right? You see the sun rising in the east, you see the sun setting in the west, but is it real? Does the sun truly rise and go across the horizon and set? No, we know it. It doesn't happen. The sun is fixed, but the earth rotates, and so we have an illusion of sunrise and sunset. So just because I see it does not mean it is real. Now the sky is blue. Is that real? Is the sky really blue? What is the color of the sky? What is the color of space? The reason it appears blue because the light of the sun, when it gets refracted by the atmospheric air, it gives an illusion of blueness. But actually, the space is black. When you go beyond the Earth's atmosphere, will you see blue sky? No. When you go beyond the Earth's atmosphere and the sunlight is not being refracted by the atmospheric air, it's pitch black. Space is pitch black. Even though sunlight is traveling through space to Earth, it doesn't illumine anything because in space there is nothing for the sunlight to illumine. So if the sunlight is not illumining everything, it looks black. But the spaceship will be lit up in space. Why? Because the sunlight is illumining. It is a solid object. Either if there is air or something solid, it gets illumined. You can see it. Otherwise, they say space is pitch black, 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 till you reach the next planet, Mars or Moon or, you know, Venus. Then again, the sunlight is reflected. So the sky is not blue. So just because I see it blue, it does not mean it is truly blue. So when we say what is real in Vedanta, in the spiritual studies, when they say something is real, what they mean is it is unchanged at all times. In the past, present and future, it was the same. It was there in the past, it's now in the present, it will be in the future the same. In the waking, dream and deep sleep, it is the same. So what is it that was there in the past, is here now and will be in the future? I was not there, you were not there, you know, 100 years back or 200 years back, 20 years back, this building was not there. So whatever was not there, appeared for a while and then will disappear, is not real, it is an appearance. But there is only one thing real, which always was, always is, and always will be. You can call it God, you can call it Om or Brahman or consciousness. So real is that which does not get changed in past, present and future, does not change in deep sleep, dream and waking. This world is there in the waking state, right? I see this building, I see the people, but when I'm dreaming, do I see this world? No. I create my own world where I have all kind of ridiculous ideas, and I take, you know, thoughts from different aspects. Then I put it together and I create this world. And in deep sleep, there is no world, there is no dream. Even I do not know that I exist. In your deep sleep, do you know where you are? Whether you are sleeping on a bed or sleeping, a poor man sleeping on the floor or a rich man sleeping on the bed, their sleep is the same. In deep sleep, they don't know where they are. So what is not there in all three states? I am not there. My mind is not there. My mind, is my mind there in the deep sleep? No. So whatever is not there is called an illusion. What is unreal? Unreal is that which never existed. Like the horns on my head. Let me see first if I have them. The horns on my head. Are they real or unreal? Unreal, right? Because they never existed. I haven't developed them. So horns on my head are unreal, right? Because it never existed. And what exists in the past, present and future always is real. So what is that which appears temporarily and disappears is called an illusion, an appearance. So on the substratum of the consciousness, God or Brahman, this world appears. And in the world, I appear, my mind appears. And so everything is a temporary appearance, but it is called an illusion because you cannot call it real because it changes. The mind also changes, right? Sometimes I'm happy, sometimes I'm unhappy, sometimes I'm agitated. So anything that is changing, anything that is temporary is called an illusion or an appearance. Real is only one thing, and unreal is that which never existed. Anything that never existed is unreal, and that which always exists is real. So they say that each one of us has to learn to solve the problem ourselves. Like that teacher, he could have answered that man's question, you know, just like that. But that man would not have learnt it. He had to think about it, contemplate upon it, and come to his own. That's the good teacher, where he makes the student understand it themselves instead of spoon feeding it. Like the math. Now suppose somebody gives you 20 math questions, right? And they're all similar problems, but like they will give you one particular theorem, like the, you know, square on the hypotenuse is the Pythagoras theorem. And then they will say, okay, now related to this theorem, there are 20 different problems related to it. So that student has to solve each problem. That's how he becomes proficient in that knowledge, in that theorem. But suppose the student goes to the end of the book and reads those 20 answers. You know, the end of the book has answers. He writes the 20 answers, takes it and turns it into the teacher. Now the teacher doesn't know. And so she will give him an A. Why? Because he got 20 out of 20 right. But he did not learn. He did not study. So that is our situation, that we expect our guru or our teacher to solve the problem for us. They say, do not solve it. Yourself think about it. So just as the math student himself has to learn, not go to the answer. So that's why the teacher can guide us, but each and every one of us has to independently come to this conclusion. And the conclusion is that this troubling mind is illusory. The mind that gives me problems, we say, like we had talked before, there is a functional mind that I have to get up in the morning, take a shower, go to work, that I have to do. But the mind that judges, the mind that gets unhappy, happy, has problems, that mind is illusory because it appears and disappears. And that's what one has to always focus. That's why in meditation, we focus on what is permanent, what is real. And that alone is the substratum of the whole universe. That's why they say God alone was, and from him emerged this whole universe, all the earth, space, fire, water, air, and then all the human beings, animals, birds, plants. So what we do is we get caught in the body, mind, intellect, in the world of objects, emotions, and thoughts, and we forget that our true reality. So that's why the teacher again and again is taking you back to focus on what is real. And once you have understood that, then the mind cannot bother you. So once you understand that I am that reality, then the mind will create problems. But I am not affected, because nothing can affect a person who is established in the truth. That's why all these great saints and sages could remain undisturbed despite all the problems that the world created for them. Talking about creating problems, this lady tells her friend, you know, my husband, he's an angel. So she says, you're lucky, mine is still alive. So that is the trouble we have. So that's what, the troubles will come as long as you think the mind is real, as long as you think the problems are real. Then some people think mind is brain. You know, brain is the mind. Why are you thinking of mind, anything and all? Mind is the brain. If mind was truly the brain, and that's a very common misconception. I also had that same idea. So they say, but if mind was the brain, then at the time of death, what happens? Is the brain taken out? No, the brain is buried with the individual or cremated or whatever has to be done to that. So if the brain is cremated or buried, then what happens to the mind? The mind should disappear too, right? If the mind was the brain, then there should be no mind existing. And if that was the case, then they say you go to heaven or hell. Then who goes to heaven or hell? Right? All the books say, the Bible says, the Quran says, the Gita, all the scriptures say, after death you go to heaven or hell. Now the body has been buried or cremated. Now if the mind and intellect is the brain, then that also was cremated or buried. Then who goes to heaven or hell? What they tell us, the Hindu scriptures say that the mind and intellect, which is called the subtle body, after death, when the body is buried or cremated, the subtle body goes to heaven or hell and suffers all the consequences of its good or bad actions, and then finds a new body. It might be after a week, it might be after 10 years, it might be after 100 years, depending on how much time you have spent in the higher worlds or the lower worlds. So then that individual takes another birth, and that's where the theory of reincarnation comes, that we are born again. And again, people say, what is the proof of reincarnation? Well, there are certain proofs. I won't go into too much detail. But the fact that all scriptures say that there is heaven or hell, that means there has to be a subtle body, the individual, which goes to heaven or hell. Then the fact that different people, a child born, one child may be born in the house of, you know, Rockefeller or Kennedy or, you know, Bill Gates, and another child is born in a, you know, jungle in Africa, born with AIDS because his mother had AIDS. Now, why would a God who is all loving and compassionate and kind, why would he give one child all the comforts and luxuries and another child to suffer? And he wouldn't do that because he's kind and compassionate. So each, because of our actions in the past life, the subtle body, when it takes a new birth, it gets a new body based on its karmas, based on its actions, based on its desires. So based on that, I get a body. And also there are instances of people who have remembered their past life. I talked about it one time before. But there have been even articles in the newspaper. There was a lady in India who actually said that in my previous life, my name was this and I was living in this village. And she was a young girl. She was about 12 or 13. And she said, no, my name is not this. I'm not this. I'm that lady. And I was living in that village. They said, how can it be? It can't be true. So they took her to that village, which was 500 or 700 miles away. And she went there and she said, yeah, this was my house. And then she saw the young boys and they said, these are my children. What do you mean these are? Yeah, these are my children. And she named the boys. She named the because then they realized that their mother had died and she recognized everybody. She named all the people in the village. She found the house. So she actually remembered her past life, and that was came in the paper. And she actually recognized people who were her children, who were older than her. And she said, these are my children. So examples are like that. Then people who are child prodigies, you know, somebody like Bobby Fischer at age 12, at age 10 was a chess grandmaster. Mozart at age 5 was composing symphonies. Shankaracharya at age 7 was already writing scriptures, you know, commentaries. So all these are proof of reincarnation. And then we said the sunrise and sunset, we already talked about. And the mind is in all the three states is not there. My mind is there in the waking state, in the dream state. My mind is very active, but in the deep sleep, it is not present. Also, when we go into deep meditation, when your mind is completely still and your deep meditation go inward, then again the mind does not exist. So something that appears sometime and disappears another time, you cannot say it is unreal. If you say it's unreal, then you say, no, it's not unreal because the mind is torturing me. The mind is giving me problems. So they say the mind is an illusion, the mind is an appearance, and can be overcome, can be negated. So that's what we do in meditation. We relax the body, we watch the breath, we chant the mantra. The goal of all of them is to quieten the mind. And when the mind becomes completely still, which happens, you know, brief moments, then in that stillness, you feel the inner silence, the inner peace, the inner bliss. So this is it's a difficult subject, and I'm sure I myself am having difficulty explaining it. I tried my best. And it's, especially for somebody who has come the first time, you know, this will be hard because, you know, you don't have the background of the book. But even for the rest of us, this is, I'm also learning the subject. So be patient, because this subject will be covered in more detail in the subsequent verses. where he will talk more about who am I, what is this ego, how does the ego arise, and how you can go beyond the ego to your true self, the true nature, because each and every one of us is really that consciousness, that Brahman, that substratum, who is at this moment playing a role. So how to negate the ego and how to go beyond the mind will be covered in more detail. So this verse is just, he's kind of throwing a bombshell to us, saying the mind is not real. So I hope I have been able to convince you that mind is not real, it is not unreal, it is an illusion, it is an appearance which temporarily comes, disturbs us, and then goes away. So instead of giving too much importance to the mind, oh, my mind is upset, oh, I'm agitated, oh, I'm stressed, focus on what is the support of the mind, where is the mind originating from, what is the origin, who is giving life to this mind. So once you go to the root of the problem will be dissolved. So instead of trying to, you know, calm the mind, okay, I'm stressed out, so I go on vacation, or I, you know, go meet with my friend, or go to a restaurant, or go to a movie, or take a Valium, or, you know, take a drink, couple of drinks of alcohol and go to sleep. All these are temporary means of quietening the mind. The mind for a while gets okay. I take a sleeping pill, I sleep 8 hours, and next morning the mind is still there. So instead of trying to solve the problem, we say dissolve the problem, go to the root of the problem and negate the mind, and then only you will be solved of the problem. Otherwise the mind will keep coming back, will keep torturing you. And all these great saints have done that. They have gone beyond the mind to the God's presence within, become one with him or with her, with the Lord, and then only the problems can be solved. Are there any questions or comments? Right. Yeah, in Vedanta, yeah, the chair is real, but a chair is an appearance because it wasn't there. 5 years ago, there was not chair. And then again, 5 years from now, chair becomes old, we'll shred it. So what that means, it is a temporary appearance. It temporarily exists, but is not permanent. So whatever is temporary, we call it as an appearance or an illusion. It's not unreal. I'm not saying that chair or table is unreal. It exists, but it is temporary. Focus on what is permanent. That is alone is real. What is permanent, but always was. So you can call it temporary and permanent. Yeah, better way. Like the gold is real. The ornaments are unreal. Right? The gold is the truth. The ornaments, you can create a necklace and then you can melt it and make it into a bangle and then melt it and make it into a earring. The mud is real. The parts are unreal. Because the mud, from the mud you create the, if not unreal, you can call it an illusion, a temporary appearance. The mud is real because it always was. Mud was, is, and will be. From the mud you create a pot, temporarily you call it a pot, and then when it breaks, it again becomes mud. So the mud is real, the pot is an illusion, appearance. The gold is real, the ornaments are illusion or appearance.
Temporary state.
Temporary state, right. Appearance. Unreal is which never existed. So that, you know, we are not saying that. Unreal is which never existed, never was. It's just a figment of somebody's imagination, something that was just created out of thin air, but really does not exist. So mostly we have to focus on real and illusion, or real and temporary, permanent and temporary. The unreal, we don't really pay much attention to. Right.
Doesn't cause any doesn't bother you.
That's a very good question. There are two or three ways to quieten the mind that is disturbed. One is to realize that an event happened. Now you cannot go back and change it, and the mind will get disturbed. But then you say, okay, it happened. What is the use of me disturbing at this moment? Thing already happened. There was a death, or there was an accident, or So by logically thinking, you can say, well, you know, why am I getting disturbed about it? It happened. It's unfortunate it happened. So you talk to your mind and say there is no reason to get upset. That's number one. But if the mind is so, you don't know, you know, what happened. I saw the burning and I saw the flesh and so many people burned to death. It was a horrible sight. So then you, other way is to become a witness and say, okay, my mind is disturbed and thinking about all those horrible thoughts. Yeah, okay, mind is disturbed, but I'm just watching the mind. And you watch the mind and say, okay, mind is disturbed, let it be disturbed. So be a witness. And let the mind do its thing. But when you become a witness, Sakshi, then what happens is the mind cannot anymore disturb you that much. If the mind can only disturb when you get involved with the mind. But if you can watch it as a witness and say, okay, yeah, the mind is upset, I understand. Mind is agitated, I'm upset. But I'm not upset, the mind is upset. And the third way is to go back to who am I? Am I this body, mind, and intellect? And we always talk about that, that I am that consciousness. And in me, this body, mind, and intellect have appeared. We think the other way around. We think I am this body, mind, and intellect, and in me, small somewhere hiding is this little consciousness, you know, that is giving me life. That's how we always think, right? There is life somewhere hidden, somewhere in the heart or somewhere. It's the other way around. The consciousness is everywhere. And in that consciousness appears this body, mind, and intellect. Consciousness is there even between him and me in that empty space. There is consciousness. Even between the chair and even in the chair, it is there in the form of not as life, but as existence. Consciousness is even there in space, it's even there in heaven, it's even there in hell, it's even there in the furthest, beyond the furthest stars, even trillions of miles. And in that consciousness, this body, mind, and intellect appeared, and all of us are nothing but that one consciousness. There is only one consciousness that has taken all these different forms. So I think I am this individual, my name is Diana or Anil or Jesse or whatever, but really I am the consciousness. And so in me, this mind is there and this mind is creating problems, let it. So there are three ways to handle it. One is by logic, one is by witness, and one is by negating that this mind actually is just an appearance, actually I am the consciousness. So there are various methods, so whichever one works for you. But that's a very good question. Thank you. I hope I was able to answer. Yeah.
How do we know God is real? Because if we are illusion, if we are an illusion, how can we as an illusion contemplate the real?
Which is true. But we have an intellect. Temporarily we are here. We are an illusory entity. We are a temporary entity. When you contemplate, how could we contemplate? By stilling the mind. So by right knowledge, by reading the scriptures, and by following the example of the Mahatmas. Like somebody has never climbed Mount Everest, right? And he said the peak is very difficult. So how does he go? He reads books, and then he reads the examples of Hillary and Tenzing and all these, and what problems they encountered, and how they prepared, and how did they, and what kind of training. So he has never been to the peak of the mountain, but by following the example of other people who have gone, by reading books, he can then prepare himself to reach that. So similarly, yeah, I have not seen God, you have not seen God, but there are great Mahatmas or sages or saints who have experienced God's presence. That's number one. And they tell us, the scriptures, the Bible, the Quran, the Bhagavad Gita, the Vedas, the Upanishads, the Dharmapada of Buddhism all talk about that there is a higher entity that has created this world. That's number one. So, by example of the teachers. Second is that if you don't believe in God, you don't believe in God, you don't believe in Jesus, you don't believe in Vishnu, Mahesh and all, but do you believe in an intelligent entity that created this universe, or does it happen by chance? There's a very intelligent universe. All the planets are in perfect harmony. They rotate around the sun, you know, once a year. And then the human being has such beautiful DNA. 4 billion cells working in harmony. This beautiful thing called man, could it have been created by chance? This whole universe, did it just appear from anywhere? Even they say, oh, you know, these air, space, fire, water, earth were there. They were there, but who created them? Oh, they were always there. And then they just happened to get together and created the universe. It's like saying, I put bricks and stones and wire and, you know, cement and the wood and all those things and leave them here and leave them for 100 years. Will they together gather and make a house? Can it ever happen? I leave it for 10 years, 100 years. Will those pieces ever get together and themselves make a house? Will that happen? Can that happen? No, right? You put brick and stone and wire and wood and tell them, okay, you connect together and make. They won't do that. There has to be an intelligent being who can put them together to make a house. So when a simple thing like a house cannot be made by itself, they say, oh, the air, space, fire, water were there. They just got together and suddenly the universe appeared. How can this complicated universe appear when even you cannot create a house by chance? You can throw them together. You can hit them together. You can circulate them. You can rotate them. You can mix them. They'll still not make a beautiful house. You need an intelligent human being to design a house. So you don't believe in God, but at least do you believe in an intelligent entity that created the universe, or you don't believe in that? The universe cannot appear by chance. There has to be a cosmic intelligence. You don't have to call him God. You don't have to call him Vishnu. Don't call him Father in heaven, Jesus, Allah. Don't call him anything. Just say there is an intelligence. That's all we are saying. There is an intelligence which we have given a name and given a form. But there is a cosmic supernatural intelligence that has created the whole universe. That's at least that you have to believe. As a scientist, you cannot say that things happen by chance. Nothing happens by chance. There is a science behind everything. No, it's a very good question. So I'm answering your question. That you don't have to say there is God. You just say there is an intelligence, intelligent being. Especially as modern scientists like Einstein, he started out very skeptical. But the more he studied the theory of relativity and quantum physics, he said, oh gosh, such a powerful intelligence there is that must have created this universe. And then he said, my only goal in life is to understand the mind of God. That became his goal in life. He then became extremely metaphysical. From a physicist, he became a metaphysicist. Because the more intelligent you are, first people have blind faith. And then for a while they say, I don't think there is God. But then when they really go to the heights of intelligence, then they say there has to be a very, very intelligent entity that created the universe. And you can give him any name. You just call him intelligence. You don't have to call it God. But there has to be a substratum. A thing cannot appear from nothing. This whole universe could not appear from nothing. They say there was nothing and then the universe appeared. Something cannot emerge from nothing. Like if there is nothing here, can this nothing create a house? Nothing cannot. Nothing cannot create something. Something can create something. Like if I have brick, stone, wire, water, wood and all, and then there is an intelligence. That's intelligence can put this something together. 4 or 5 things and create a house. But there is nothing there, and you say from nothing a house should appear, it doesn't happen, right? So the universe cannot have emerged from nothing. There was something, there was an intelligence, there was a substratum from which this universe emerged. So that's the indirect way of proving that there has to be something intelligent that created the world.
Amazing, that is a big miracle.
Yes. And then people say Big Bang. He's right. From a Big Bang, the universe appeared because there was an intelligence. Where did the power for the Big Bang come from? They say the world emerged from a Big Bang. Actually, they do say that the world was small like a grapefruit. This whole universe was so compacted. That's what the physics says. That there was a Big Bang and then all the planets separated out. From the size of a grapefruit, that's what they say. But okay, even if that is the case, but where did the, how did all the planets get compacted into that grapefruit? And then where did the energy, they say a beam of light penetrated. And the, that's what the Vedas say, that there was, the world was a Hiranyagarbha, they say was like an egg, was an egg-shaped, compact. The same thing, what science is saying. And then a beam of light penetrated, which provided energy for that whole explosion to happen. And that's what science says also, that it was, the world was compact and then there was a big bang. But where did the energy come from? The Vedas say that there was a beam of light. The consciousness penetrated that and that's caused the explosion. So they both are saying the same thing, but the science doesn't say where the energy for the big bang came from. Well, the Vedas answer that question, that there was a source of energy, which they call as Brahman, they call as the intelligence or the consciousness. They do not give it a name. Actually, Brahman doesn't have a form. In the Vedas, God never had a form, never had a shape, never had a name, never had a description. It is only in the later books, because it is hard for man to contemplate Brahman, which is formless, you know, has no form, no shape, no color, has no qualities. It's very hard. So that's why they said, okay, you can contemplate on Krishna or Vishnu or Jesus, or, you know, all those, you know, different forms have been given for us, because it's hard to contemplate on the formless.
The mind is impermanent because it's not carried from one birth to the next.
No, the mind and intellect are carried, but what the nature, Prakriti has done is put a curtain so that individual, the mind, intellect, called the subtle body with the vasanas, which is called the jiva. The mind, intellect with the vasanas is called the jiva or the subtle body. That individuality takes on a new body, but nature has made a curtain so it doesn't remember the past. So the same mind and intellect continues, but there are some impressions. The vasanas remain. That's why one child is artistic, another child is sports oriented, another one is interested in science. So the tendencies remain, but the ideas and thoughts the child has to learn. The ABCD, if you have learned in your previous life, you won't remember. Except for very rare cases where they remember their past life, only for a short while.
So when you say the mind is illusionary, what exactly?
It means it is a temporary appearance. The mind is not permanent. See, right now your mind is quiet, and then you go out, and then somebody says something, and then your mind will be agitated. Or then you go to sleep, your mind is not, no longer functioning. So it is a temporary, and it's changing. That's what we mean.
But not it's, that it's not, it's the same mind does not fall.
Yeah, the same mind is not there at all times. And so, but our problem is we are trying to fix the mind. We're trying to solve the problem. My mind gets very upset. So what can I do? Can I get a drink? Or can I get a Valium? Or can I change my husband, and then maybe I'll be more happy, you know, he's getting worried already. Or I change the city, you know, maybe I move from Bakersfield to the coast, it's too hot here, so maybe on the coast I'll be happier. So we try to change the problem by changing the circumstances. Instead of do that, go to the root, dissolve the problem and go to the root of the mind, and which is the consciousness. Then the mind will not bother you as much. So instead of trying to fix the mind, just dissolve the mind. My mind is there, but it's not me. So let the mind do whatever it's doing. Your mind will appear and disappear, but I am not the mind. So that understanding, when it becomes clear, then such a person has gone beyond the mind. It's not that he becomes mindless or that he becomes brainless, but he's no longer affected by the vagaries of the mind, by the fluctuations of the mind, by the joys and sorrows. Because in the Gita, again and again, he says, Shitoshna Sukha Dukha, you know, Sama Sangha Vivarjitaha, Sama, you know, Shatroch. So why? Because in the world, a wise person will see, in the body there is heat and cold, health and ill health, joy and sorrow, success and failure. They will be there for every individual. But you and I, we get very affected. Something happens to the body, I get affected. Somebody says something to me or things don't go well. But a wise person knows, he said, the body is meant to deteriorate. So why should I be upset? The mind one day will be happy, one day will be unhappy. Why should I get affected? Let the mind do what it's doing. Somebody insults me, I get happy. Somebody doesn't insult me or whatever, I get unhappy. No, I am the same. Let the mind, intellect be. So such a person, when he goes beyond that, then no longer the mind can affect him. That's the idea. The idea of studying the scriptures is not, it's to apply that and see that the mind at times will be happy, unhappy. The body will be healthy, unhealthy. Heat and cold will be there. Now it's going to be 100 degrees. So it's okay. I'm living in Bakersfield. It's going to be 100. So what's the need to be upset about it? Why complain about the weather? Just tolerate it. Okay. And then when it's cold, it's fine. If you're that unhappy, then move to San Diego. You know, but we can't move. So then just tolerate it and say, okay, heat and cold will be there. July will be hot or June will be. What can you do about it? Nothing. So people will praise me. People will insult me. One day somebody loves me. Tomorrow he will not love me. That's the nature. Nobody is going to love me forever. Yeah, it's okay. Mind will be disturbed, but I am not the mind. So the reason he's telling you to negate the mind is to focus on who you really are. Then let the mind play. Let the mind play its games. But it's like you're watching a movie or watching a play. Some people get so involved with the movie, when the heroine is crying, they start crying. But a wise person says, yeah, this movie is going on. Let me enjoy the story. When the movie ends, he gets up and walks out. So either you be a witness and watch the movie and enjoy the movie, or you get so involved in the movie, you start crying and then you become upset because the poor heroine is suffering and all that. So that's what happens to us. We get so involved with the mind that we start suffering with the mind. Then we get unhappy. But be a witness, watch the mind and let the mind do its thing. But I am not. So that's what we practice in meditation. That's the whole purpose of learning to meditate, is to detach from the mind. So what we are trying to tell you is that the mind is a temporary appearance. Do not get too affected by that. That's why he says naiva manasam. There is no reality to the mind. It's just a changing appearance. And that's the straight path. That is the only way. Like he was asking, there are three ways. The straight one is just negate the mind.
Here something that is temporary, that's what you like.
But they say just as a mirage is an appearance in the desert, when you wake up to that reality, then you see the whole world as an illusion. See, you and I are still in the illusion. That's why this world to us looks very permanent. And some God looks like impermanent, doesn't exist. But once you wake up, just as in a dream, the dream appears so real, right? It's just somebody come and tell you, a Mahatma, you're dreaming and there is a tiger chasing you and you're up in the tree. And then a wise Mahatma comes and says, son, this tiger is not real, this tree is not real. You are not even in Africa. You are sleeping in your home in Bakersfield, comfortably in your bed. You will get mad at the Mahatma. You'll say, what are you talking? I can see the tiger. He's really there in your dream. And you might even beat the Mahatma, or you might even crucify him, which we did to all our great saints. Either beat them or crucified them or killed them or tortured them. So the wise people try to tell us, so similarly, this world at this moment appears very real to us. But when you wake up and realize the truth, which I have not realized, so I cannot tell you that. But what the Mahatmas tell us, that just as when you wake up from a dream, you wake up and you say this dream was unreal, it was just a projection. So when you wake up, so have faith that one day I will realize the truth. And once you wake up, then this world will truly be an illusion. For them, this world is an illusion. That's what they say. It is as much an illusion as the mirage in the desert. For a Mahatma, for a wise person, this whole world is an illusion. But he continues to work in the world for people like you and me to enlighten us, to guide us. And that's why all the scriptures were written and all the preachings and teachings of these Mahatmas are because of that. But the world is actually an illusion. But you only have to wake up, which you and I are not awake. Just as in a dream, the world, the dream doesn't look like an illusion. Like looks very real to you as long as you're sleeping. When you wake up, then you say, oh, you know, why was I so upset? And then we used to wake up sweating and heart beating and scared and, you know, I was going to be killed. But nothing was real. So for a wise person, you and I are also like the dream. But we have not woken up. So we just have to have faith in the teachings of the Mahatmas. and hope that one day we will also realize. That's how I think about it. Okay, I have not reached, but somebody has, and they have told me that, and they're not going to be lying. You know, Jesus and Muhammad and Buddha and Shankaracharya and Swami Chinmayananda and Zoroaster and Guru Nanak, and all of them cannot be liars. You know, they cannot be liars. They were telling the truth. Saint Francis and Mother Teresa, all of these great saints and Mirabai, and they cannot be liars. They were great realized masters. And when they have said something, I believe it. That's true. And one day, hopefully, I'll also reach. So you have to start with faith instead of starting with the doubt. But we're not saying that you have blind faith. And then you apply the teachings. And that's why this book, they said mind is unreal. So start thinking. How can the mind be unreal? Go home and think about it. Why does the teacher say mind is unreal? So the teachings, you first believe, have faith, and then go and apply it and then see if it really works. If you already say, this is all bunk, you know, how do we know there is God? How do we know? Then you know, then your journey will not progress. Then you won't progress. But if you believe in the scriptures, believe in the Mahatmas, and then try to prove what they are saying is correct, that's good. But right off the bat, you say, oh, everything written in the scriptures is bunk. They are all liars. Jesus, Buddha, Shankaracharya, Chinmayananda, they are all, you know, Guru Nanak, they are all crooks. Then obviously you won't learn. I'm not saying that they are, but, you know, people come with that idea that all this religion is just opium of the masses. You know, it's just opium given to us to keep the people happy so that they don't complain. That's why they say there is a God, you know. That's why your destiny is destined by God. At least he won't complain. You know, people come up with those ideas. But what I think is that I don't know it, but there are some great people who have described the truth. Let me believe it and then try to apply as best in my life. So start with faith, I think. Faith is very, very powerful, very necessary.
That's where we live by faith, not by sight.
So. Mm-hmm. The faith can move mountains.
Right.
Right. I believe that. Right. Not by sight. Yeah, you live by faith. Right. That's what they say. Faith is you believe what you cannot see so that you may see what you believe in. Yeah, first you believe what you cannot see. And then you're hoping that you see actually what you believe in.